You're listening to the Alex Wolf Podcast. Interesting conversations about innovation, economics, culture, and history for the independent thinkers and curious minds. I'm your host, Alex Wolf. All right, we're back with another episode, and today I'm going to be talking about entertainment and sort of how I went from resenting it to appreciating it on a whole different level. So if you listened to last week's episode, you might remember when I said I've grown to appreciate entertainment over the past few years. And at first I resented it because I felt like it was sort of man's evil way of distracting ourselves from, you know, quote unquote, more important things. So as a typical bookish person, again, if you listened to last week, I talked about being a broccoli person in a world that is used to eating donuts and ice cream and stuff like that. And so I felt like nonfiction books and documentaries and things of that nature were more important than movies and, you know, any form of entertainment. But I have grown since then to really see the value of entertainment, like I said, on this whole new scale, which hopefully can be helpful for you as well, because the reality is, after I was learning more and more about indigenous societies and ancient Eastern philosophy, specifically Indian philosophy, I got a new appreciation for what the nature of entertainment actually is, and how honestly natural of a phenomenon it is to the universe and to our species specifically. So the hopes of this episode is to sort of reveal and redefine entertainment from maybe what you typically think about when you hear it, which might be like trashy TV shows or like cheap pop music that you want to like turn off the radio when you hear it. And sort of starting to see it more as a natural expression of activity that happens on every scale pretty much in the universe. I know that sounds like really deep and like kind of crazy, but that's what I'm gonna attempt to describe. And honestly, I think the reason why this perspective might be helpful for you is because if you are a broccoli person like me, you can kind of replace your resentment that you might be having for entertainment and see the beauty in it. And I think it does help serious sort of academic broccoli types like myself kind of lighten up. And it also inspires us about creative ways to use entertainment as a medium of expression or getting your message out there. Because again, as I was explaining last week, it is so important that if you really do care about getting some kind of message out there, that you know what media climate we're in so that it doesn't get completely ignored. And yeah, that's what I'm gonna talk about today. And I want us to start off with envisioning like what entertainment means to you now. And like we can just start with like the Hollywood sign and like the hellhole of LA, no offense to my LAers. But you know, LA and just the energy there of so many people really, really desperate to be a star. Now, we're gonna go from that and we're gonna zoom all the way out and picture a yin-yang symbol. So I'm sure you've seen a yin-yang symbol before. I'm not really gonna explain it because I'm gonna guess you probably already know what I'm talking about. It's the white and the black circle with the holes and kind of looks like fish, you should know. So most people interpret the yin-yang symbol as a sign of good and bad, but in a way it is, but I also think it's so much more broader than that, and it is. It's not just what I think, it's what it is. And so the yin and yang energies represent all opposite forces in the universe. So obviously black and white, light and dark, moon and sun, man and woman, dry and wet, hot and cold. I mean, there's like literally millions of different polar forces that have relationships with each other. And so the yin and yang symbol represent those two forces. But when most people see yin and yang as just good and bad, they think of those two forces as fighting. And of course, when you perceive them as fighting, you want good to win. But the idea of perceiving the forces as fighting is a very Western point of view. Okay, it's a very Western point of view because Western ideals and religions are based on eradicating all negative or unwanted things. So things like death, sickness, poverty, and there's no doubt those things are negative and unwanted. And so Western technology and ideology is deeply based on how to try to get rid of these negative things or how to solve sort of how to, you know, get rid of these unwanted bad things. And I think, you know, you can look back in history and it started with, and it's still going, but it started with wanting to get rid of the fundamental ideas of death, sickness, and poverty. But it's now evolved even past that, where we're trying to get rid of super minor inconveniences that are relatively speaking to those more dramatic ones, like, you know, having to talk to your Uber driver or having a long-term relationship or managing your cash. Like, we have technology that is really designed so that you can have, they're trying to get rid of any like minor inconvenience that you might experience living your life. That is a very Western ideology. I mean, I fall for it for myself. Like, you know, if my garage door doesn't open properly, it's like, ugh, you know, that's so like not civilized according to the sort of culture we've built. So we're all just about like, how can I have a painless experience of life? And so we've been on that conquest of trying to build tech to get rid of all the unwanted things, because again, Western philosophy thinks it's the right thing to do. It, you know, it's something that is definitely even seen as something that's possible, that, you know, if we just got really smart and we just use technology, we could really get rid of everything bad in the world. Now, part of why I got into tech philosophy is because I don't think that is a responsible way to create a culture, clearly, because I think that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And if you don't understand the nature of the universe, or if you think that you have to get rid of every bad thing to in order to, you know, have a meaningful life, then it's going to have all types of destructive consequences. So in ancient Eastern philosophy, they generally see opposing forces not as fighting, but more as playing, okay, which can look similar to fighting, right? But as you know, the energy of playing and fighting is very different, even play fighting, right? It's different because it's not serious and there's no hard feelings at the end, right? So the best way to see this is with sports. And yes, there are some aggressive people that fight over sports. That's definitely a thing. But for the most part, out of all the millions of people who love sports, what do? We go, we root for our teams in a passionate way. We're cheering. We're hoping our team wins. We're holding our breath. We're grabbing our seat. And what, you know, whoever wins, wins. But when the game is done, what do? People go home and they go on with their lives and they maybe, you know, look forward to the next game. So that is the best sort of analogy I can give for the Eastern philosophy view of opposing forces. And what does all of this have to do with entertainment? Why am I bringing this up? Well, it's because when you see opposing forces as playing instead of fighting, you actually tap into the essence of what entertainment actually is, which is this expression of tension, right, that creates drama. So when I say tension, I just mean the actual, those two forces colliding in a way that creates tension. And again, that tension is what creates drama. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, the draining person in your life who's dramatic, right? That technically applies, but I'm talking more about like the essence of the fundamental like nature of drama. And the definition of drama is an exciting, emotional, or unexpected series of events or set of circumstances. right? It's drama, right? It's kind of being put in a position where you don't really know what's going to happen at the end. That's what makes sports good. That's what makes movies good. And so in ancient Indian philosophy, they perceive life not as a fight with whatever opposing force is going on or unwanted force, but as a drama. You know, they see those forces as playing. So, and according to that perspective, the essence of life is to live out this dramatic, adventurous ride while knowing at the end it's a game, okay? So it's the foundation for how the premise of The Matrix came to be, like the movie, everybody loves The Matrix, right? It's a very like easy, accessible pop culture reference. and again, in ancient Indian philosophy, they know all about The Matrix, right? That's where that comes from. And in fact, the root for the word matrix is a Sanskrit word called Maya, which means, you know, mother of illusion. It has a lot of different meanings, but for the most part, it means this like illusion. And Maya is also the root word for many other words that have to deal with what I see as sort of like nets or lines that preoccupy our eye. So for example, math or matter, again, matrix, these are all stemmed from Maya. And yeah, these are the illusion is that what you are looking at, people see the net, but they don't see what's behind the net. So for example, when we build societies, the first thing we do is we draw lines on the ground and we say, okay, this is my plot, this is your plot, this is our state, this is your state. But beneath all that is obviously one encompassing globe, but we use the lines to create order in our and civilization. So Maya is basically, she's the mother of that, like, sort of those lines. And again, in math is all about throwing lines on top of all of the things that are hard to measure so that we can actually get accurate ways of measuring, you know, things that are hard to measure. That's what math is all about. So it makes it just easier for us to comprehend and, again, create order in society. So waking up from that illusion is called nirvana. I'm sure you've heard that term before. And it just basically means you wake up and you don't necessarily, you know, you're not so plugged into the matrix that you don't understand that there's something underneath. And a lot of people try to achieve nirvana by doing like a lot of hokey pokey stuff, whether it's moving or going on a silent retreat or whatever. But it's really just a realization that the appearance of a boundary between you and everything else is not there. It's like why people go, you know, they take DMT or get ayahuasca. It's because they're trying to experience this feeling of no boundary between everything there. So the boundaries we create are boundaries we create. And they're not necessarily evil or wrong. They're actually what we use to create society and civilization, like I said before. But let's go back to the drama. Now, drama, in my opinion, is a better word for entertainment. I think game, like, or games, or even playing is a better word as well, because it helps you perceive the activity of life as an expression of play instead of a serious expression of fight, okay? And again, Western philosophy is all has been about how do we conquer. You know, how do we figure out how to get to this other country and take it over? Or how do, you know, it's always been about how do we win this game? And it's about winning the game more than it is about playing the game. So why is looking at life sort of in this way, in the Eastern philosophy way, why is that so enlightening? And I feel like it was enlightening for me because it helped me understand and again have less resentment for our natural captivation for entertainment. So I was going from, oh my god, I live in a society where everyone's glued to the, you know, phone and we're all distracted, and I still believe that, but I don't see it as a like a evil plan as much as I see it as, you know, brutal, irresponsible technology that is exploiting that, okay? So again, I'm not, I think it's very natural for humans to want entertainment, and drama, whether it be through plays or movies or through their own life, let's be honest, right? Some people just love to have the drama in their lives. I prefer the movies, thank you. But the technology in which we are using to create that drama is what I don't like, because I think that part of it is the irresponsible part, and it's the part that makes us further think that this is a fight instead of a more harmonious kind of game. So, again, since the beginning of humanity, humans have used entertainment, they've used storytelling, right? That was the big thing that stood out to me, because as I was doing research for my lecture on why so many millennials feel unaligned with their age, I was learning so much about rites of passage and just what families were and how wisdom gets passed down. And over again, I kept finding that it was about mothers and fathers telling their kids stories, or kids, going around grandma and grandma telling the story. And they could be myths, they could be personal story. There's just so many different types of folk tales and things like that, and those are where we hide our morals and our wisdom and our lessons. And so that's amazing. Like, I think that is what made me kind of wake up from my fussy, proud academic self who wanted, again, that broccoli side is just like, oh, well, everyone should be reading this, interpretation of technology by Aldous Huxley, and I'm into boring shit. Like, here I am thinking, oh, well, everyone should just read boring stuff like me. No, like, boring stuff is not, has never really been a thing in the sense of, densely, like, the one of the most type of, when I was talking about lines and how we create, we throw lines on top of things, intellectualism and reason is probably the highest form of expression of those, like, lines of breaking things down. And I happen to like it, but it's not really that natural. It's not as natural as seeing an image or hearing a story where that's something that is very approachable and something almost everyone can understand. And so, yeah, it's been so weird, because after I had that wake up call, like, I'll be tweeting like the academics I love, and I'll be like, but you gotta make a movie about it. Like, I look at the researchers and I'm like, this is, I love this paper, but like, no one knows what the hell is going on. And until you put it in a story or a movie, it's not going to happen. You look at Star Wars. What I love is, like, when I decided I wanted to take philosophy seriously, is that I realized, like, the philosophers are the ones that kind of get forgotten about, because you look at how the story of Star Wars came to be, and basically, George Lucas read a lot of Joseph Campbell, who was an academic, and he was all about talking about the importance of myths in civilizations and societies. But Joseph Campbell got his work from Jung and Watts, and Carl Jung was a psychologist, and of course Watts is my favorite philosopher. And it's like, but George Lucas is the one who took all this philosophy and all this psychology, and he packaged it up into this, like, sci-fi movie. And he's the one that, you know what I mean? Like, that's how culture gets the message that came from Jung and Watts and stuff like that. But we don't really put the two and two together. And so I it's cool, because I kind of like being sort of in the background, and I want my work to inspire the directors and the authors and the singers and the people who do have that medium, because I'm over here just being the boring fucking intellectual, and I need y'all to package it up. I can articulate it and stuff like that, but yeah, it's the people who can transform into a creative medium, and that's been a dynamic that you can see throughout history, right? The artist who listens to philosophers, it's artists. Who listens to, the psychologists, it's people who want to integrate that stuff into their art. So just putting that, shout me out if you end up making the next Star Wars and it's influenced by some of the stuff I've talked about. But anyway, okay. So back to, like, you know, humanity using storytelling. Since the beginning of time, like I said, we've been using masks, right? There's so many masks that are used. And what are those used for? To create a, I was going to say a production, which it's a very lean production, but it is a production in nonetheless, in the sense that people come together and they dance and they create, they act. You know, there's all just dozens, hundreds of different communities and tribes who put on the mask, and they either act like an enemy or act like another, you know, person in the society. We've used illustration in ancient times. We've used sports in ancient time, music, dance, to preserve civility and order and to pass down wisdom and tradition. So entertainment, to me, is as natural as a heartbeat. Now, thank God. Drama is as natural to me as a heartbeat. Again, what isn't natural is like the technology and the medium in which we are giving that entertainment, which does play a huge role. Because one of the heartbreaking stories I remember when I was reading about television kind of going into the home, is I was reading about some Native American community who I think the government was like giving televisions to the community. This was, I want to say, in the 90s, and they were giving the televisions because, like the internet is today, televisions were needed so you knew what the hell was going on. I guess there were no like local papers or anything like that, so the television was the way the news was being given to these people. And I think half of the neighborhood got it and the other half didn't, and the half that got it was warning the other half that didn't get it because they noticed a complete change of behavior in their children, and how their children were no longer interested in hearing the bedtime stories before bed. They even like talked about the kids having like attitude problems, and they were like, look, do not let these people bring this TV into your house because it's going to change your house. And that gave me chills, and I remember that story because I'll talk another day about the importance of the home in a civilization. It's like something that's very near and dear to me, and something I take very seriously. And that's why, you know, a technology that is replacing how stories and entertainment is being displayed in your home or in your life have a huge impact and influence, obviously, right? So that's more what I have the beef with than the entertainment itself. And I'm so happy because, like I said, I didn't want to resent entertainment. I mean, there's nothing that makes you feel more isolated in this country than being the one who's like, eh. And to be honest, I am still a little eh. I'm not like in love with celebrity culture because I feel like we've replaced so much of our values and like our connections with family to celebrities and like celebrities we grew up with. Like even like this Halloween, Halloween has changed so much from like dressing as a scary person to like dressing up as like your favorite rapper growing up, or like not even dressing up as, but replicating a literal visual production that they did. I'm like, oh, this is so fucking millennial and celebrity-ish. So I'm not saying like, I it's nuanced, right? Like I still have my feelings, but I can at least appreciate the nature of entertainment and drama in society. So I wanted to go back to the fact that I do see it as natural as a heartbeat. And I think the main difference is that most of us have forgotten the art of the game is in playing, right? And we think it's in winning. Again, that's a very Western idea. The substance of play comes less from who wins, but more in either playing the game or watching the game. So again, once the movie's done, the movie's done. Once the game is done, the game is done. If you pay tickets to see a basketball game and they tell you before you get there who's gonna win, then that just defeated the whole purpose. So again, the substance is not coming from who wins. The substance is coming from the conflict of those opposing forces as you are experiencing the play, right? Again, the conflict of those opposing forces, whether it be the Nets and the Knicks, or whether it be, you know, I'm trying to think of like a movie like Batman and Joker, right? That's what you're here for. You're here to see how these opposing forces play, how they dance, and that is what that's what you're here for. Who wins is not as important. So, at least in this philosophy, I think in Western philosophy, it's all about who wins here. And you know, obviously we've seen how that works. So, yeah, if you aren't aware of that seductive nature of a game, in the sense that when you're playing the game, you're so, or when you're watching the game, and again, it could be sports, it could be movies, it could be your own personal drama, you're so attached to who should win. You want that yin-yang symbol to either turn completely white or completely black. You're not appreciating the fact that the beauty is in those, the black and white together. You want to turn it into a circle that has one color. And that's because the game is so seductive that it makes you want that. And so you think it's all about what happens after. You think it's about the output. You think it's about the trophy or the item or the status that you get. But to play the game of life for what happens after the game is to not enjoy any of the day-to-day activity and to live for those various trophies and outputs that are never as fulfilling as promised. And I've talked about that a lot before. Alan Watts has a lecture when he says something like, you know, the reward for going to school to speak French should be to learn how to speak French and talk to French people and watch French movies. And like, that should be the reward. But when school started making everything about, you know, the trophy, the degree, the honor, then it was less about enjoying learning French as the reward and having the paper on your wall as the reward. And so the reward, again, is in the playing itself. And in this case, the playing would be the challenge of learning French. And using French to add meaning to your life. So, yeah. Anyway, I think I really started to absorb how natural drama and play is. This was a few years ago. And for me, I'm really into seeing the same pattern play out on every different scale of life. So meaning like, in our daily lives interacting with other people, or on a molecular level, or on a galactic level, you'll see that certain patterns play out on these different scales. And I love that because I see that as nature, right? And so one day when I was on the train, and this was at the time I started to learn about all this stuff, and I noticed everyone on the train was playing some kind of game. It was either, you know, a lot of people were on those like addictive Candy Crush type of games, or people were like on Instagram, which is definitely a game, y'all. It's a social game. Or, you know, people were reading books, you know, fiction books and being invested in someone else's drama, or people watch Netflix on the train all the time, which again is watching a game. And of course, sports. People were watching sports. But I was just like, I was on the train having my like moment of like, wow, like, you know, this is a natural, it's sort of like a default activity. And again, Watts has a lecture where he asked the audience, you know, what do people do when they've absolutely done everything they've needed to do, either for the day or maybe like someone got a fortune and they're retiring early, like what do people actually do with spare time? And that's a funny concept, spare time. And the answer is it's always a form of play. It's a party most of the time, right? And what happens at parties? Dancing, music, things that are done not for the output, but just for the simple enjoyment of those forces. You think of dance, that's a pattern. Again, you see that pattern of like using your muscles to go this way and that way and this way. That is creating a pattern. A movie, again, that's a form of a play. It's a form of a drama. It's a form of a pattern. Sports, same. It's the same pattern. It's the pattern of one force, trying to take over the other and being engaged and emotionally captivated in seeing that friction, okay? And then once one takes over, then boop, it's done. You walk away. You're no longer captivated. Sports, intercourse. I put that on the list too, right? Playing a board game, playing a game, literally. Oh, I'm bored. What do you want to do? Oh, let's play a game. We lean into play because that's the default activity of reality on almost every scale. There are dramas happening in your body right now. Cells that are fighting other cells. Cells that are making love to other cells, right? It's happening zoomed all the way out in the solar system, right? So like the yin-yang symbol represents how seeming opposing forces are using each other and creating tension between each other to create this field of behavior that you're looking at right now, of the reality in front of you. That is really what that symbol is representing. So like if you were to take the color white and spread it, right? Or even spread the color black apart through light, you will see that all possible colors are hidden within them. That's why we use those. And what I mean is that white bounces off all color and black absorbs all color. So between them is every possible combination of form and space. Like to use an analogy, between them is every possible hand in this card game of life, every possible combination of thing that can come out. And you think of the Big Bang, it's opposite forces colliding to a point that, you know, form and space are trickling out, growing out, manifesting out into this crazy reality we're in now. And like I see, you know, me as like a dangling fringe on the end of this like huge explosion that happened a while ago. So ancient Indian philosophy, as well as many others, right, appreciate any random play, right? Every random card, every random hand in this combination, and understand this tension as the quote-unquote point of life. It's not to get a trophy at the end. It's not to win. It's to experience life. And you can see that. You can see that philosophically through the technology people build, through the agriculture people have, when people are trying to get rid or trying to fight everything unwanted, and when they are accepting opposing forces as a natural expression of the universe. So I love this kind of stuff, and it gives me a really fond appreciation for people who create dramas, artful dramas, whether it be a movie, whether it be a song, and it makes me appreciate people who make sad things and do make dramatic expressions of unwanted feelings and scenarios, because those are very therapeutic in dealing with unwanted scenarios. We all know that the first step of recovery is acknowledging the issue. And we live in a culture that is very much, I guess we acknowledge the issue, but we think that it is something that needs to be deleted or something. And I just find that to be very barbaric, to be quite honest. And I think that another striking theme that kept coming up when I was learning about these rites of passage in all these different societies is that they were basically trying to come up with some type of ceremony or ritual that would get a child to understand that being an adult means you have to deal with those opposing forces. You have to deal with good and you have to deal with bad. And that basically life ain't all roses. Most of these rites of passage were basically about scaring the shit out of these kids and saying, hey, yeah, you're an adult now and shit gets real and there's gonna be a lot of scary stuff. There's death, there's mourning, there's disease. And yeah, we'll try our best to keep it low, but I want you to know now that this is what happens in life so that you feel prepared for it. And a big theme of why I theorize why many millennials don't feel aligned with their ages, because we were not prepared culturally for the responsibilities and sobering realities of adulthood. So I'll link to that here. And, you know, obviously this year I think has been a big example of that, undeniable example of that. And I hope this was clarifying. I hope this gave you an appreciation for the role of entertainment. If you see me flaunting the yin-yang symbol, I found like an Instagram filter that puts the yin-yang on my face, and I love it because that's always what I'm thinking about in the background. And again, this philosophy is not for the faint of heart, in the sense that it embraces this idea that unwanted things happen. And there are some philosophies and beliefs that just don't want to acknowledge that. And that's fine. But it just, again, I say all this stuff because that was not working for me. Because I'm like, wait, hold up. Y'all saying nothing bad happens, but bad stuff is happening. And my personality type deals better with embracing that, embracing reality and being actually prepared for challenging times, because I feel like it gives me strength. And again, some people, they just don't want to do that, and that's fine. There's really no judgment. I think it's all about finding what works for you. So thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you watch a good movie after this. Oh, one last thing I'll say is this is also why I love comedians. I see comedians as the most enlightened form of art, in my opinion, an artist, because comedians, and even again, in a lot of these myths, and you'll see in these indigenous tribes and civilizations, the comedian or the trickster or the joker is this representation that wants to lift that the matrix, right? It wants to lift the net. So just as a reminder, to find laughter in things that seem very serious. And again, that's not for everybody. It's deep shit. But the Joker is like, it's the one that's like, you know, they're lifting it up. There's a sticker and they're kind of like lifting it up with their nail. And they're just kind of like, ha ha ha, like I can show you and I can handle both sides of this. And I think that's what makes comedians so great. I've been watching Comedians in Cars on Netflix. I love Seinfeld. I think he's a very zen focused comedian. Like, he has this very like ordinary, like just it's very simple, right? His comedy is very simple and ordinary, and it definitely is all about how life is a pain in the ass. And he talks about this like Porsche he's driving, and he's like, yeah, you know, it's a lot of maintenance and it's a lot of this and it's a pain in the ass, but he goes, life is a pain in the ass too, right? But it's worth it. So again, I do better with that kind of stuff than like, life is always amazing and we can make it amazing together through this. I'm like, it's not for me. And I love that kind of, I think comedians in general are very realist people. And I get along with realist people because I freak the dreamers out, y'all. I don't know what to tell you. I freak the dreamers out. I love the dreamers. We need y'all too. But people be looking at me like, damn girl, you're depressing. I'm like, I feel great. I feel, you know, I feel like, you know, super inspired by life. So whatever, to each his own. So thank you. Hope you have a great rest of your day, and looking forward to your feedback on Twitter. I'm very, very grateful, y'all, for the feedback and the listens, and very honored to be a part of your day. So yeah, say hi to me on Instagram or Twitter, and we'll talk soon. Bye. Thank you for listening to the Alex Wolf Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And if you aren't already, make sure you're subscribed to this podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. For more resources on innovation, economics, and culture, visit alexwolf.co/newsletter and sign up for my email list. Thanks.